Hi folks, this is All Things Product with Petra Wille
and Teresa Torres.
And we're so happy you're here. Teresa, today it's my turn to prepare a question for you. And I thought about one. What would you say, how do we learn how to build good AI products, or even if it's just like small features? So how does an organization learn that? How do product people learn that? Who should be involved? What's your take?
I love that you're asking this, because I have been diving deep on this for the last 4 months. I think we've talked about my interview coach a little bit in our AI prototyping episode.
A hint.
So basically 4 months ago, and by the time this airs, it'll be like 7 months ago, I started building an AI product, and not like I wrote a prompt and I'm just dabbling in ChatGPT, but like a real robust AI product. And as I was building it, I started to realize like, oh, this is a new skill set. There's new things to learn. And so I went out and tried to learn from other people, and there's a lot of discussion, but one of the challenges is that like this guy Aman, we'll put a link to his stuff in the show notes. He distinguishes between an AI powered product manager and an AI product manager. So an AI powered product manager is what I feel like most people are talking about. How do I use AI in my daily life to do my job? Whereas an AI product manager is building a product that is based on AI. And it's the second category that like, I don't know that we have good material out there about this yet. And so.
Fair.
So like we get dabbles of it. Like Lenny has interviewed the I forget if it was the CEO or the CPO of Cursor and how they're building Cursor. And we've learned a little bit about how, I forget the name of Devin's parent company, is called Cognizant. I don't know. It doesn't matter. They just bought Windsurf. But they built Devin, the like autonomous AI software developer. And like, so we're learning a little bit about how these AI native companies are building and like starting to like create their stuff. But what I'm really interested in is like, let's say I work at, I don't know, Yelp, or is Yelp in Europe?
Yeah.
Okay. Like, or I work at Uber, or I work at like, pick your favorite pre-AI company, and teams are just starting to think about like, I'm riding the AI wave, as you say, like, how do I get good at this?
And I think, yeah, and everybody, the first use case everybody stumbled across was customer support chat.
Everything's a chat bot, right? Okay. But I don't want to get distracted by that.
Yeah, so, no, but other than that, there's not much happening yet.
So I've been starting to think about like, how do we, just like I thought about how do we give structure to discovery, I'm starting to think about like, how do we give structure to building good AI products? And I'm starting to think about like, there's some distinct skills that I don't think exist in regular products, although they have some analogs. And I'm going to do this off the top of my head. I'm going to turn this into a formal blog post. Maybe it will be published before this is released. Maybe it will come shortly afterwards. But here's what I'm noodling on, and then we can dive in on each of these areas. Like, we all at this point know how to prompt an LLM. We've all gone to ChatGPT or Claude or Gemini and typed in, can you do this thing for me? And we're all building, I would say, like elementary school skills around how to prompt an LLM. And like, that works when it's a user of one, because I can type in my elementary school level prompt. I can see the response. I see it's not very good. So then I like give it feedback. And then through our back and forth, we get to like a high school level prompt, right? And I have lots of tries because I'm having a conversation with the AI. The challenge is when we build AI features, it's still prompt driven, but there's not a conversation. Like, you as the product person don't get multiple tries. You have to write a prompt that just works. And it can't work for a use case of one. It has to work for a use case of thousands or hundreds of thousands or millions, depending on your audience. And so I think there's a skill around that. And I think that's where this term prompt engineering came from. But I think when most of us hear that term, we think about our personal experience typing into ChatGPT. And I think that's a different use case from this use case of like, I'm putting a prompt in my product.
Yeah, I agree. All of that reminds me so much. And, you know, Teresa, we are here for quite some time internet-wise. So it reminds me so much when mobile became a thing. Because all companies knew they have to wrap their head around this mobile use cases to some extent. Nobody knew how to do it. Then it was a thing to have these mobile teams and mobile product managers. They had for, and it was not a good idea, by the way. I would not, again, do it exactly that way. But for a limited amount of time, I think it was the right thing to do, that people really were able to wrap their head around, okay, what is user experience like on a mobile device with smaller screens and no keyboard? In the beginning, there were even keyboards, by the way. But anyways, on the BlackBerry, there was still a mobile a keyboard. But it was really a different skill set, and you had to build different. The teams had to have different skill set. APIs were a thing in these teams as well. So it reminds me a lot of, because I saw so many heated debates about you should not create AI product management roles in your organization. You definitely should. And I see all the job postings for AI product management folks already.
Well, okay, so that's just, I'm going to try to come up with like what I think the big skills are.
Yeah, that would be an amazing blog post, Teresa. Do it.
Well,
write it.
Yeah, so this isn't going to be comprehensive just in this conversation, but it's the start of what I've been thinking about, and I'm going to continue to evolve this.
Fair.
So I think the first one is prompting, but not the prompting we do day to day, the prompting you put in a product. There's a second part to that. So there's like literally what do you write to instruct the LLM. But one thing I learned really early on, your prompts can get way too long, and really long prompts with like complex tasks in a single prompt confuse LLMs. So like a pattern that's already starting to emerge is prompt decomposition. So like my interview coach started as one prompt. Today it's 8 prompts. Mm-hmm. So then there's this like skill that engineers are good at that I think product managers are going to have to learn, which is decomposition. Like how do I take this complex task? Although product managers learn this if they have learned how to build continuously and iteratively, because it's the same skill, right? Like, how do I break this into...
And even if you really learn how to write a good requirements document, you need to do it as well. So, because good requirements documents in the old days were a bit like prompting a machine because it was a black box.
Yep. So then there's... So this first skill is like prompting the way that it's different in a product. I think the second skill is like...
Is the...
Orchestrating is the best word I have for this. Like orchestrating, what's the right workflow or system that makes this a good, that like makes this all work? So for example, in my first interview coach, it was a very simple orchestration. It was one prompt. You entered a transcript, it spit out feedback. Now my orchestration is very complex. It starts with an LLM evaluates, is this even a story-based interview? Mm-hmm. If it's not, it doesn't continue. It just says, I can't give feedback on a non-story-based interview. Mm-hmm. Then it moves into looking at different dimensions that it grades on. And then I have to aggregate all that feedback and put it into something that's useful for the, right? So there's like this orchestration piece of it's no longer just, I ask the LLM to do something and I get a response. And with that orchestration, so some of that is like system design. But with that, that's, and I would say that's the product management skill of like, how do I decompose this, the like domain concept of this product? But there's also an engineering skill of like, how do I deploy this system?
And
I had to go through multiple iterations of this. Like my first deployment was a little app that I built through Replit. And then I moved to a Zap, and then I moved to an AWS step function. Like, and each iteration gave me more reliability, more stability, more ability to like post-process what I was getting from the LLM. So there's this like system design piece. And here's the thing. My interviewing coach is still really simple. One input, output. But I still had to get to this more complex system design. As soon as we have a as soon as there's a conversation and there's back and forth, or it's an agent and it can use multiple tools, this orchestration piece becomes really hard.
Yeah. And on top of that, And I'm not sure, maybe that's another dimension in a minute, but what I find hard, and by the way, Henrik Nyberg, to some extent, just briefly let me talk about his metaphor. The talk that he gave at Product at Heart, he used this metaphor of interns. So he said, like, think about you hire various interns for really small jobs and you connect them in your organization really well so that they form a little community and they can talk to each other. Yeah. But everyone has a really specific task. Yeah. So every intern, and he said, like, and even from, and that's the safety and regulation standpoint, this does make sense because one intern maybe gets access to one part of your system, but it would be way too dangerous to hand one intern all the keys to all your systems.
Exactly.
So that's another layer of the service design that you're talking about, I bet. That's really this kind of, and yeah, okay, your interview thing, maybe not too much risk involved, but definitely a layer is risk mitigation to all of the systems building and orchestration.
Yeah, actually, I think the risk comes up in all of the skills. So like if I think about prompting.
Then you have the biases in the prompting, which is a risk.
There's also prompt injections and like how do you guard against prompt injections?
Yeah.
So I think for each of these skills, there's a product skill and maybe a design skill and an engineering skill. Yeah. And then, and I'm really interested in piecing the, like, we're just learning who's going to be good at what. So like, I think in a lot of early teams, they let their engineers write the prompt. And the problem with that is they don't have the domain expertise or they don't know the customer use cases well enough, right?
Exactly. So, experience, user experience.
But you can't just give it to the product manager or the designer because they don't have all the prompt engineering skills of like knowing that Anthropic prefers XML and OpenAI prefers Markdown, right?
Yeah.
So what we're seeing in each of these buckets is really a need for cross-functional collaboration. So I think in this system design bucket, how are we orchestrating the different tasks, interns? I love that analogy. How do we break this complex thing into smaller individual things, which I think a product manager is probably doing. But then there's a corresponding engineering problem of like, how are we deploying and orchestrating all these calls?
And constantly testing.
We're going to get to testing. So then I think the third skill is around observability. So in the regular product world, we have analytics and we know how to like instrument our products. Some of us do. I think with LLM products, we have this challenge of what does instrumentation look like? And I think what we're learning is we have to log traces. So a trace is a user input and an LLM response. But logging traces is a whole big can of worms when we get into data privacy laws and like who gets to see that data and do we remove PII from it and do we remove other sensitive information from it? Mm. And there's this whole skill about observability design. So I think that's a third skill. And there's product parts to it because product needs to make sure that what you need to evaluate if this is good or not ends up in the trace. And engineers need to be involved because they're the ones doing the work to like try to automatically remove PII, right? Like, so then I think there's a fourth big bucket around evals, and evals are a very complicated topic.
Ooh,
I think,
that's a loaded topic, Teresa.
I think we're going to do a whole other episode on it. But evals are basically like, let me give an analogy. You build a feature, not an LLM feature, a regular deterministic code-based feature. You ship it. When you ship it, your engineers have written unit tests. They've probably done integration testing. Maybe you have a QA team who's tested it with a bunch of test cases. Your product manager has signed off on acceptance criteria. You know that it matches the spec. We all can have confidence this feature is going to work the way it's expected.
Exactly. And you know when things break.
Yep. Okay. Now what happens when we launch an LLM feature? LLMs are non-deterministic. So that means we could give it the exact same input and we're not always going to get the exact same output. So it raises the question, how do we know if our LLM feature is performing? And what a lot of companies are doing, which is kind of terrifying to me, is they're just releasing and then they're waiting to see what they hear back from customers. And what happens is some customers are like, this is the best thing ever. And other customers are like, no, this is terrible. And this is why we see the thumbs up and the thumbs down on like every AI feature, because they're trying to figure out who is this working for and who is this not working for. Well, I think a lot of this is because we're just learning how do we evaluate an AI product. And so there's this idea in the AI ML world of evals. And evals are not unique to LLMs. I think they started in with machine learning products.
Yeah.
And the way evals worked in machine learning is, so with machine learning, like, let's just use classifiers because that's a really simple use case. Like, you have a classifier that's trying to figure out, is this a dog or is this a cat? Right? And so you've trained it on a bunch of dogs and a bunch of cats, and then you release it into production. Someone uploads their photo and it says, this is a cat. And then you get feedback. Okay. How are they evaluating if that classifier is any good? They're creating a really large test data set. So not the data set that they used
for training,
not the data set they used to iterate on it, but a test data set. And they're using that to score. So they're saying, we have 1,000 pieces of data in our data set. We're going to score it. And that's going to tell us how accurate our classifier is. Okay. That's great if that data set represents the types of inputs you're going to get in production. Now you can say, okay, well, this data set's representative of what we see in production. We saw like a 97% positive rate. Now in production, we're pretty confident that 97% of the time it's going to work. And if we let people give feedback, we'll identify those 3% of the time and we'll start
We
might iterate and get better.
Yeah.
Okay. So how does this work with LLMs? Of course, because a lot of LLM apps are being built by data scientists and machine learning engineers, they started with the same idea. So the very earliest eval was like, create a data set, define your inputs, define your outputs. You'll hear people talking about this. They have spreadsheets where a product manager is saying, if a user enters this, the output should be this. And then they're running the LLM against that, and they're evaluating their app. Okay, that's better than doing nothing. But here's the challenge. How do you know if those inputs represent what you're going to see in production?
Nobody knows.
You don't.
And people, everybody knows people. So you see definitely different things.
Yeah. Okay. So now I learned about evals and I was like, wow, this is both quantitative, but it's also qualitative, and it requires a really deep understanding of use cases and what your customers might do, which means it's really connected to discovery. So we're going to do a deeper dive on evals. It's really, evals are just a piece about how do we know if our AI product is good? And there's a whole new skill set that is definitely cross-functional. It requires both product managers and designers and engineers. And it's hard and it's rapidly evolving and most people are not doing a very good job. So that's like my like really crummy first draft of this like AI model I'm starting to develop around.
I love it. And I think it, so there's a lot of, I get a lot of positive signals out of it because it's kind of the basic rules of the game haven't changed. So cross-functional collaboration, still a thing. Collaboration, still a thing. Learning together and from each other, still a thing. So we can do a lot of the things that we're already good at, ideally.
Loops with customers, still a thing. Yeah,
exactly. So so that's actually super promising, I'd say. It's not as confusing as one would have thought.
I have skill that I forgot about.
Oh, one. Okay.
It's at the beginning of the process.
Before the prompting. What is it?
I have a customer problem I'm working on. I have a target opportunity. How do I know if AI is the right thing to use?
Yeah.
Right? So we all are still building our muscle of understanding what are LLMs good at? What are they not good at? Should we use it in this instance? Should we not use it in this instance? And then I'm going to add another one to the very tail end.
Is it viable to use it in that instance?
And then at the end, I'm going to add one more, which is you don't just do evals once. There's a huge ongoing maintenance piece of this. And so how do we upfront understand, like, will we get enough value from this being an AI feature to incur the forever maintenance cost of continuing to evaluate, are we getting quality outputs? Because here's the thing, like with a deterministic software, I can write unit tests and integration tests and like, and in my nightly builds, like I will know when they break. And as long as
That's what I said. Like we know when they break.
Yeah. And as long as they're not breaking, out of sight, out of mind, I never have to think about it again. That's not how AI products work. We have to always be monitoring because we need something to tell us this is breaking. And it's probably, there is some deterministic code in that process, which we'll get into in our AI evals episode, but it's a little bit different. So we have to always have a human, we always have to close the loop with the customer. Does this continue to work for our customers?
To deliver value. Yeah, exactly. I agree. I love it. Teresa. So
I'm going to try to turn that into a way more structured blog post.
Write that blog post. Yeah. It even, in my head, it calls for a drawing even. So we have these pillars and we have the cross-functional collaboration.
You're the master of drawing your concepts. I'm going to learn that from you.
That was amazing. Thank you, Teresa.
Thanks, Petra. That was fun.
Indeed.
Stay tuned for the evals episode.